body of Dr. Florence Weaver was found brutally murdered in her home this morning.
Did you know her?
No, but I saw her die.
I'm seeing things. I'm seeing murders. As they're happening.
Hello?
He says his name is Gabriel. I think he's someone from my past.
Happy birthday.
Whatever happened to you before you joined our family hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine.
Stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary?
Devil.
Whatever it was,
it's back. He killed again. He's getting closer. He wants to talk to you. Mom, what do you know? He's coming for me.
Who are you, Gabriel?
Hi everybody, it's your humble and happy host, Isaac Weishaupt, of Conspiracy Theories in Unpopular Culture, and today we are going to talk about the film Malignant, and we're going to get into plot spoilers, not yet, I will warn you. And here's the question, should you watch this movie before you listen to this show? I mean, maybe. It's meh. It's very meh. It's fine. If you love horror movies, maybe you'll want to check it out. Because, honestly, there's a pretty insane plot twist. But the movie kind of sucks. Okay? And in a weird way, you know, the movie's 2 hours, okay? Which, you know, violates everything I love. Got to be 90 minutes, especially if it's a horror movie, like a vapid horror movie. Like, come on, 2 hours, do we need this? But it's 2 hours, and ironically, it surprisingly doesn't feel that long, so cheers to that. But I was disappointed because this was directed by James Wan, who's done a ton of great movies. He's done The Conjurings, Insidious's. What was the other ones he did? Like The Nun? I even liked The Nun. I thought The Nun was great. People hate that movie. I thought it was great. But this one is clearly the worst one of the bunch that I've seen. But it's not even that awful. I've seen worse. I've sat through worse. It's fine. Sometimes I would say it's good, not great. This one, it's fine, not good. That's where I put it. And I watched it for free on HBO, so, you know, throw all that stuff in a blender and use your subjective opinion of whether you should watch this or not. I'm not recommending it, but it's fine. The poster for the movie, we see a woman with a big knifey-looking thing going towards her eye. It's symbolic of the all-seeing eye. So we know we're in for some illuminate confirm time. And I will illuminate confirm the movie. And you can go to my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Be sure to like and subscribe. And I will have a post there with plot spoiling photos. About all the subjects we're going to talk about. Because I got, I don't know how many photos. 10 photos maybe. screenshots, photo. I call it photos. Screenshots from the movie. And before we get into plot spoiler territory, let's talk about who's in it for one brief second. The main character is played by Annabelle Wallace. The main character's name is Madison Lake, which sounds like a great lake up in Wisconsin there. Isn't there a town, Madison, Wisconsin? But she looked very familiar. So that's why I looked her up. I mean, I look up all this stuff for you to pull out anything interesting. She was in The Tudors, which I enjoyed immensely. I loved that show. I thought it was great. But that was about it as far as people you'd recognize from the movie. And Bloody Disgusting, which is a website for horror stuff. Back when I was back in the golden age of blogging in 2011, ironically, Bloody Disgusting was one of the things that sparked my interest in blogging about the Illuminati. Because I used to check them every morning. This was, and maybe my memory doesn't serve me well, because I had been on MySpace and I had been on Facebook. But I was still in the mindset, because I'm like an old Gen X turd, you know? I like candy corn, which is an old person thing. Like, that's kind of about how old I am. I used to bookmark web. This is what you used to do before social media. You would bookmark websites, and every morning you'd get your dumb little coffee and you'd sit down and you'd check each website to scroll through what they had posted in the last 24 hours, and then you were all caught up. Whereas today you go on social media and you just follow these companies and websites and things, and then hopefully if it passes the algorithm, Zuckerberg will show you what's new for them. Which I hate, right? I mean, it's great in the sense that it saves you time. It's terrible in the sense that they filter out what you see. So anyway, Bloody Disgusting. I read their little piece on it, and apparently back in 2019, they were saying that this was supposed to be a giallo film, and I greatly beg to differ, but I can see how it has those elements. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, giallos, and this is not official, this is me spitballing off the top of my dumb brain. I think in like the 60s or 70s, some of the bigger Italian filmmakers like Dario Argento or Mario Bava, I think even Lucio Fulci, did movies where there was like a killer, usually with a hand-wielded weapon like a knife, that would kill people, and you would see the killings through the eyes of the killer, with the idea that it was sort of a murder mystery, and you didn't know who the killer was until the very end. And sometimes there were, you know, very sexy ladies along the way. I mean, it's a really kind of a cool vibe, you know, if you're into horror movies. If you're not, you probably think it's demonic trash. Like, I just watched, I'm pretty new to like really digging into giallo films. Because I hate modern day horror movies. Like, they're generally not good. I don't know why. They just don't have the heart that those old 70s ones did. I watched The New York Ripper. It's so great. So great. But Dario Argento did a bunch of good ones, like The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. And they usually have like a really weird name. Really very wordy title. I can't think of it. The Red Queen Kills 7 Times. I mean, weird ass stuff. You're like, what the hell is this movie about? And it actually influenced if I'm not mistaken, it influenced Friday the 13th Part 1, where, plot spoiler, the mom's doing it, not Jason. But that's how that movie went, where you don't know who the killer is, you're just watching them happen. Watching the killings happen. And I like them because I like those old 70s horror movies, because, like, the effects aren't so good, like, it doesn't look real, like, you're really witnessing all these murders. That's what I don't like about, like, when Hostel and Saw really came to prominence, that's when I sort of disliked modern horror. I mean, it's fine. I'll still watch them, some of them. That's why I like James Wan movies, because he's not too heavy on the gore. Right? I like gore like everyone else, but sometimes they make it too much. Like, it's too torture-y for me. Anyhow, this movie's got some gore in it, so Yeah, is it a giallo film? I mean, kind of, not really. I mean, barely. So I think they got it wrong there, is what I'm trying to say. Okay, all right. It's plot spoiler time. So if you wanted to watch this movie, I'd advise you to go do it now, because we're going to start talking about the plot, and somewhere along the way, I will ruin this movie for you. Which I already told you, it's fine, not good. But, you know, it's up to you. Let's keep it moving. All right. The movie, it starts out showing us, we're like in a hospital scene. It's 1993. So, like, Nirvana's real hot right now, I guess. I don't know. Is that right? Nirvana? Yeah. Nirvana was hot in 93 still. It was the golden age of music. You had Nirvana and Tupac. Man, what a year to be alive. And the doctors are treating a patient named Gabriel. And this Gabriel character, he's going nuts. And he's got superpowers, right? He's flexing on these superpowers. He's got the CDs, which I talk about with my FanX lecture, right? Because I talk about superheroes and superpowers and how they relate to the CDs. And Dr. Weaver is working at the hospital. And she's very much like Dr. Loomis from Halloween. She's even got the English accent, right? And Dr. Loomis, if you don't know who that was from the original Halloween movies. Played by Donald Pleasance. Who I showed great adoration for Donald Pleasance in Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, User Illusion 2. Where we went through alien movies and talked about the symbolism within the movies and how they relate to the cult and how we're all, the occult, excuse me, and how we're all going to die, right? By the satanic alien worshippers. And it was during, was it Prince of Darkness chapter? Where I talked about John Carpenter's Apocalypse trilogy. I talked about Donald Pleasance and how fascinating this guy was. Well, anyway, he played Dr. Loomis. Then he died. And then Rob Zombie rebooted the Halloween franchise, which a lot of people hated. But I love Rob Zombie. I love everything Rob Zombie, which I know counters the point I made 3 minutes ago. Okay, so take it easy. I know that it's ultra gore and almost torturistic. I'm a complex, complicated, dumb guy. Okay. But he rebooted it with Dr. Loomis. No, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Okay, I gotta look this up. I won't waste your time. Malcolm McDowell, he was the guy in Clockwork Orange, right? But I believe he was in the Rob Zombie ones, and he might even be in the new ones. I don't know. It gets so confusing. Doesn't matter. You know who I'm talking about, Dr. Loomis. Dr. Weaver is very similar in nature. Anyhow, we're in the hospital. They're listening to Tupac and Nirvana. Gabriel starts catching bodies. He hijacks the radio, the RF signals from the radio, and he's like, I'm going to kill everybody. Cue the credits. And you're like, whoa, this is going to be wild. This might be the greatest James Wan movie ever, is what you're thinking. And you'd be thinking completely wrong. And so then the credits are done. They fast forward to present day. And we're introduced to a character named Madison, also referred to as Maddie in the movie. And she comes home from work pregnant, okay? Like, she's all the way pregnant, okay? Mega pregnant. And her man's is in the bedroom. He's on the bed. He's watching sports ball on the TV. She has the nerve to bother him for Tylenol. Can you believe that? And then she turns off the sports ball with the remote. A big no-no in the world of sports balling. You know you can't shut off the big game when it's sports ball time. So naturally he gets in her face. And this guy's a real creep, okay? He talks about how when she went low, he went lower. He talks about how she keeps letting his children die inside of her. My God. And then he shoves her head against the wall so hard that it causes her to miscarry the baby. Now, this would trigger an event that will be revealed in due time. So her head hitting the wall is what conjures up Gabriel. Okay? And we'll find out why later. Now, her man's, he's so tired from being a dick that he's sleeping on the couch. And here comes Gabriel, straight from 93. And he comes in and kills him. And his body is severely deformed. His head looks like a Pez dispenser. And Madison, or Maddie, she sees it, right? She passes out. The cops come. Don't ask me how. And they send her to the hospital. And this is where she comes to, and her sister Sydney's now there. We're introduced to a character named Sydney. And she's like, hey, your baby didn't make it. So they get back home, and Maddie, she's tripping because now she's seeing stuff. She sees, in a weird way, Gabriel murdering all kinds of folks. And that's kind of like the first half of the movie, is her like witnessing these murders. Then we cut to a scene where there's a woman giving a tour of the Seattle Underground, and she eventually, like all these other people, gets snatched up by Gabriel after everyone leaves the tour. And it's interesting because you see an image that says the Seattle Underground starts here. And again, photos, images are going to be on my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. And this is interesting because the idea that the Seattle Underground starts here, this is the idea that since we're at the beginning of the film, we're starting the journey of the initiate, which, as I've talked about many, many times, it begins underground. That's where they start the rituals. And this woman is about to go through a ritualistic awakening process. But who is this woman? We don't know. We don't know. We don't care yet. We do know that Gabriel snatched her up and taped her up to the wall of an attic. And I'm going to tell you, because I told you we're spoiling plots, big hint, it's actually Maddie's blood mother. What? What? But more to come on that. Now, the next day, we're in Dr. Weaver's office. And she, you know, and like I said, this was, we saw Dr. Weaver in 93, watching Gabriel catching bodies. Fast forward X amount of years, and she's studying genetic stuff, as per the smart books on her desk. And if you look closely, like a real psychopath would, like me, you would see on the wall there's an evil eye, the all-seeing eye. She's confronted evil, the devil, Gabriel, which we will confirm later, and now she's trying to keep him at bay with the evil eye on her wall. Again, Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt, link in the show notes, like and subscribe. She retrieves her file in her little office on a person named May. And you're like, who are these people? Well, later on, you find out May is Emily May. Which makes more sense later, but Emily May, here's another hint. Emily May is actually Maddie. Yeah. We'll find out later. Again, all these things are adding up. You're like, what is happening? So back at Madeline's house, we see she's having these visions, right, of Gabriel murdering folks, and she sees Dr. Weaver attacked by Gabriel. And curiously enough, he grabs one of her award trophies for being Dr. Great Times. And you'll notice it's the medical staff of Hermes. It's the Caduceus, the double snake, around the staff. Which we've talked about many times, and to the untrained eye, that just looks like the symbol for the profession of medical care. But it's not. It's more than that. It's an occult symbol. It's the staff of Hermes. And it symbolizes the Baphomet. It symbolizes the reconciliation of opposites. And here comes Gabriel, the devil, grabbing it. And we'll revisit this and we'll take a deep dive in the conclusion on why this happens, because this is very important. And again, you got to check out the images on the Instagram. Now, Gabriel removes the serpent from the statue and makes it this murder weapon knife thing. And Maddie, she witnesses another murder. This time, though, she sees Gabriel kind of looking at her during the murder. He's looking at her, and we catch a shot of his all-seeing eye, again, with the all-seeing eye. Symbolic of the awakening, symbolic of the understanding of the Luciferian wisdom of embracing evil. And Gabriel's killing folks. He's killing a guy. This guy's involved with that same hospital from 93, the Simeon Research Hospital that they were working with Gabriel. So apparently he's on a revenge quest. So Maddie, she keeps having these weird visions. She goes to the police. She tells them, look, I think I'm seeing all these murders happen. And they're like, oh, come on now. You're not for real. And she's like, yeah, let's go to this guy's house. I witnessed his murder last night. And they walk in and, yep, sure enough, he woke up dead. And Maddie goes to the bathroom where she spends some time staring into a mirror. And this is symbolism of Carl Jung's shadow, which she also is called by Gabriel on her cell phone at the same time. Right? And this all fits together with what's going on with this movie. What is going on here? I'll stick around for the conclusion, and I'm going to let you know. Because the symbolism of the shadow and the mirror and Gabriel calling her at the same time, it all fits together, and it makes so much sense. So then they go to Maddie's adoptive mother, because we find out she's adopted, right? So we go to her adoptive mother, and because she's like, I got to get some information on my background. I don't know much about where I came from. And through a VHS tape flashback, she gets the whole scoop. Take a listen.
Maddie.
I just...
Oh. How are you holding up, sweetie? Are you eating? You look skinny. I gotta cook more.
Mom, I need you to remember. During the adoption, did they say if I had a brother or anything?
No. The only thing they would say is if they were siblings, they tried to place them in the same family.
Then who the hell is Gabriel? Mom? Mom, what do you know?
Happy birthday!
You wanted a party so bad, Maddie. You nagged us until your father gave in, and we invited your whole class, but...
They thought I was a freak. I had no friend, I remember that.
So, yeah, this bitch crazy, okay? She was talking to Gabriel as a young girl, seeing stuff. Meanwhile, the police are coming through some clips from Dr. Weaver's place, and they find out that Maddie was involved in some experimentation type stuff. And her name under the experimentation was, in fact, Emily May, right? We already covered that. And for the first time, we hear confirmation that Gabriel, from the straight from the horse's mouth, that Gabriel is the devil.
Thursday, July 23rd, 1992. Today marks the 7th year since Emily May was entrusted into our care. She remains unlike any test subject we have ever encountered here at the clinic. Though in recent months, Emily started exhibiting signs of mental psychosis, she says she's seeing visions and hearing thoughts from the devil. I've contacted Dr. John Gregory out at Hopkins, as well as Dr. Victor Fields from the Los Angeles Children's Hospital, just to help determine a course of action.
Dr. Florence Weaver, Dr. Victor Fields, working the same case, along with Dr. John Gregory. Holy shit.
So the police are starting to piece this together, right? The research facility had Maddie, and they were researching her. And now the doctors are getting whacked one by one. Now this third doctor, he's the last one that's alive. He's now in danger. And of course, homeboy decides he's going to take a nice little bathtubby bath. So you know what's going down next. It's murder. And yep, here comes Gabriel. And he kills him in the bathtub. Which you already know, symbolic of the passing over. The witch craft cleansing ritual. We talked about this so many times. You already know the whole drill with that. If you haven't, check out my shows on, I think it was the Madonna show on, remember when 2020 kicked off and Madonna was singing about fried fish in the bathtub? Well, I did a whole show talking about the bathtub symbolism. Kim Kardashian, Whitney Houston, Bobby Christina, so on and so forth. And you also see this on, there's a commercial for Facebook groups. I don't mess with Facebook, so I don't know. But there's a kid wearing, you'll know because there's a young man, a boy, wearing pearls. And you're like, oh, is that what the guys are doing now? And yes, that's what they're doing. But then they flash through a group of people in the Facebook group that they're doing all the occult New Age stuff. They're wearing the chakra stones. They're levitating. And that includes a bathtub sequence. The cleansing ritual of witchcraft. Right? So the police, they visit Maddie. And they're trying to break down what's going on here. Because she doesn't know. And they talk to her about going to a hypnotist. So that she can relive out her experiences being adopted and understand more about how Gabriel followed her to her new home.
All three victims were involved in the same case study they call Patient May. You were the case study. They were your doctors.
I'm sorry, it's all blank before Sydney's parents adopted.
I think you were born Emily May.
That's what he calls me.
Madison, the department works with a hypnotherapist that helps unlock repressed memories, trauma, sexual abuse, PTSD. Would you be willing to see one?
I knew it. She's not a psychic, goddammit.
We are going to turn back the hands of time. The bygone years reconstructing themselves. I want you to go back to before the adoption.
I think I'm in a hospital. But I don't remember any of it.
Okay, you've gone back beyond your conscious memories. Can you tell us why you're in the hospital?
I'm not sure. But I'm better now. That's why they're here for me.
Who?
My new parents.
They've come to take me to my new home. It's nice. But he's here too. Gabriel. He followed me home from the hospital.
Who is Gabriel? Is he a friend?
He says he is, but I'm the only one that can see him.
You ruined your mother's cake.
I didn't. It was Gabriel.
Stop. You can't keep lying like this, Maddie. There's no Gabriel.
Go to your room. Madison, go to your room right now.
So when he does something bad, I'm the one that gets in trouble.
Hey everybody, you know who I am, and you know what I'm here to do. I'm here to do shoutouts, that's right. I threw the old Sam Tripoli twist at you there. As you know, I've got three supporter feeds, two of which enable you to get your name shouted out on the podcast because you're such a great supporter. And you know the whole drill, so I'm not going to go through it. So without further ado, let's just get right into it. Let's start over in the VIP section, tier two, folks. We got Leslie, Papa Dom, Matthew, Allen, Chris and Hunter, Timothy, Crystal, Marisa, Joe, and J-Po. Legendary OGs in the house. Then we've got the tier three folks over there in the VIP. Tier 3 gets you a signed copy of Use Your Illusion 1 and all my ebooks that I've written. Tier 3, we got Cheryl, Jason, Brandon, and Darren. Thank you guys very much. And then finally in the VIP in Tier 4, where you will get a more specific and special shout out. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet. This is the first month that I'm doing it this way. We got John and Jason. Okay. So, John and Jason, stay tuned because I'm going to hit you guys with the more, I don't know, localized sort of shout-out. I don't know how I'm going to do that. It's going to be on one of these shows, and we're going to figure it out together. Now let's head over to Patreon, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. And let's go backwards. Let's do a little reverse cowgirl. We'll start tier four. We got John, Joshua, and Cheryl. Thank you all very much. Again, I'm going to hit those specialized dedications, show dedications, like it's an 80s radio love show. I'm gonna dedicate a show to you. Then over in the tier three, we got Izzy. Izzy's new to the team. Shout out, Izzy. Just sent a bunch of books her way. Sarah, Brandon, Jennifer, Barry, Crystal, Jade, Taylor Blake, and Kara. Thank you all very much for being in tier three. And then last but definitely not least, we got the tier two folks. This is a big list. And we've got some really cool usernames in here, so pay attention because they're coming at you hot and heavy. First off, the first one, Theories of Atlantis, yes. Then we got Mary, Paul, Lieutenant Jerkoff, always holding it down. What is he holding down? It. He's holding it down. He or she, I don't want to assume gender. Lieutenant Jerkoff could be a female. Faith by Reason, your dad. Yes, your dad. Brandon, Holly, Ryan, Todd, Sammy Iami, Jennifer, Genevieve, Beck. Oh, I'm forgetting the... Look, I don't say the last names unless you, like, send me a message and say, hey, say my last name. Jennifer B. Excuse me, I forgot the last thing. And then we got... And Brandon was Brandon D. My apologies. Genevieve, Beck B, Marisa A, Aubrey T, Vari, Amy M, Kirby G, Liz H, Rusty Shacklesford from King of the Hill, yes, Premier 65, Christy W, Vermont Hip Hop Collective, Joe Sauce, Charles, Daniel G, Zach R, Tyler D, Russell D, Tanya O, Marsha W, Jacob R, Sam I Am, lots of Sam I Am's going on here. Phil Goodrich, Art, what's up, Phil? Brooke, Tyler B, Betty, Thomas P, Mariah, Frankie L, Roxy, Roxy, Brian, Ashton, Heather, Allie W, Renee G, Spryu, Joe Nips in the house, Brandon L, M Gibb, Darcy D, Ale Mac, Prophet 7, Robert Z, that's Haas, I know Haas, William B, Big Fezzik still holding out, JT, Katie G, and last but definitely not least, my man Dave W. Thank you all very much for your support. Some of you guys have been on this for a long time, and I appreciate you greatly. Some of you are even double dipping onto both teams, so shout out to the double dippers. Also, I've got the Patreon/VIP section live stream Thursday, October 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Ask me anything, or let me entertain you with what's going on behind the scenes, what I've got cooking up for the last quarter of 2021, because I'm definitely cooking up. I got lots of shows in the old brain of mine. I just got to get the information together for you. So thank you for your support. Again, if you want to join the team, you know where to go. Link in the show notes. There's the three places. You know the three places. Two of them give you the option to go for tier two and up to get the shout out. So whenever you're ready to go ad free, you know where to go. All right. Thanks, everybody. So every time Gabriel does something a little cheeky, Maddie would get in trouble growing up. Ain't that a bitch? Also, ain't that the plot from Drop Dead Fred? Are we just watching Drop Dead Fred? For James Wan talking about how innovative and intelligent this story was, it's basically just Drop Dead Fred. It's gory Drop Dead Fred. So Maddie, she comes to from the hypnosis, and it's now also clear. Now she gets it all. She understands what's been going on this whole time.
Maddie? You okay?
I remember now. It's happened before. Waking up in strange places. Same thing. I don't know how, but Gabriel wanted to.
What did he want, Madison?
To hurt the baby. It's as if he knew that with you here, I wouldn't need him anymore. And he was right. He became a lost memory, buried deep in the back of my head. Until now.
We hear her say that he, Gabriel, was a memory buried deep in the back of my head. And she tells the police the killer is in fact Gabriel, her imaginary friend. Now, all of a sudden, whilst confessing this to the police, the woman from earlier, from that Seattle Underground tour, comes crashing into the living room. That's right. This whole time she was tied up in the attic of Maddie's house. Yes. Maddie's real blood mother was tied up in her own attic. And thank God the cops were there for the big reveal. So they arrest Maddie because they're like, oh, this bitch crazy. She's tying up her mom in her attic. We caught her. But while they're questioning Maddie, Gabriel calls one of the policeman's cell phones. So now they're not sure what's what. They're just like, I don't know, lock this crazy chick up. We're going to figure this out. And he says that, and Gabriel tells the cop on the phone that Maddie didn't even know he was nesting in her home. Sort of exonerating her, okay? But he tells them that he is a figment of her imagination and asks them to ask Maddie what his real identity is, and guess what we find out.
Who are you, Gabriel?
I thought she had already told you. I'm a figment of her imagination. Ask her what she
the devil.
That's right, it's the devil. Yes, indeed. Over and over we see this recurring message. Make no doubts about it, the devil is in Maddie's mind. It is a part of Maddie. It is, oh, I don't want to give it away. You know where I'm going to go with this, maybe. How long have you been listening to the show? We'll save it for the end. And that bird keeps chirping. My apologies. I'm not going to tell the bird to shut up. This is life in suburban hell, you know what I'm saying? This is how it goes. Birds chirping, people mowing, school buses. Okay, so Sydney, and previously we talked about the bathtub. I got the screenshot of that image on my Instagram as well. And then here's another one I'm going to have an image for. Sydney, you know, Maddie's sister, decides she's going to investigate too, okay? She goes to the now defunct Simeon Research Hospital, which is where Maddie, as Emily, came from. And we see the walls, someone sprayed, "Welcome to Hell." So again, another reference to the devil. And you can see that image as well on the Instagram. We also see, while she's there, on the directory of the wall between the elevators there, there is a bunch of offices, right? And to the normal untrained eye, there's nothing of significance. But me being the eye of the crazy folks, the truther community, I looked and scoured, and sure enough, I found something. Maybe it's crazy, maybe it's not. Child Services is in room 17, which, if you recall, we did a show back in the summer of 2020 talking about the QAnon thing, during which we talked about the gematria, the numerology of the number 17, and how that is the number for Q, right? Now, the reason that was important had to do with the resurrection of Osiris ritual, presidential inaugurations. We talked about all kinds of crazy stuff. And if you haven't heard it, I will leave a link in the show notes. This was published on the Free Feed September 28th, 2020. Okay? It has to do with America's secret destiny and the occult. So anyhow, you recall the QAnon movement. It was all about save the children. Remember that? In fact, when I'm driving around here in Salt Lake City, if you go out, there's a, if you're familiar with Salt Lake City, there's a there's a really grimy full nude strip club called Southern Exposure, okay? And right by it, there's this massive tractor trailer truck, like the bed of a tractor trailer truck. And to this day, it's still up, and it has the big Trump 2020 Save the Children posted on the side of it. Because that was the big mantra for the QAnon folks, was save the children. So how curious that Q, which numerology, is the 17th letter of the alphabet, okay? In gematria, the twilight language, whatever you want to call this, numerology, 17 is Q. It's the same thing. So to find Child Services is in room 17, that's very curious, right? Now, and again, image on the Instagram. Anyhow, Maddie, she's in the prison cell because the cops don't really trust her. They don't know what to think. Sydney, meanwhile, she gets the videotape files. So she's got the full scoop about what happened with Emily May, a.k.a. Maddie, at this research facility. So we find out that Serena May, that's Maddie's mom, that's the one that come crashing down through the attic. She was 15 and pregnant from a rape when she first went into Simeon Research Facility. And she went in there for help because she was on her own. And that's about all they give you. And I wanted to know a lot more, right? And, you know, what? When we look at the world of conspiracy theory and MKUltra type ideas, you'll come across this idea that there's dissociative identity disorder, there's traumatic-based mind control, and a lot of times it involves people being sexually traumatized, particularly people that are vulnerable, that don't have parents, right? Which fits into the big narrative of why a lot of conspiracy people think they want to destroy the family unit, because without a protective mother and father, that kids are left to be abused and, you know, left to the desires of the Illuminati. And we'll revisit this in the conclusion. And the subsequent videos that she, Sydney, plays reveals quite a horrific surprise. Quite a horrific surprise. This is where the big plot twist of the movie happens. Gabriel, we find out, isn't just an imaginary friend. No, no, no. Gabriel is what is called a teratoma. It's a tumor with eyes, teeth, and a mouth on the back of her head. And this is real. Obviously, in the movie, this is an intense version that I don't think has any basis in reality. But Gabriel is a tumor in the back, connected, obviously, to the back of Maddie's head. And Gabriel's got arms and legs and everything. It's connected to her brain and telling her to kill people. Oh, it's horrific. And we hear young Emily May refer to him again. Was this the third time? Refer to Gabriel as the devil. Now, this clip is a bit longer, so hang in there. But this one tells the whole story as to what's going on in this movie.
Emily, are you okay? Are you scared? Well, don't be. He won't wake up, I promise. I've given him a heavy sedative. It's probably why you're feeling sleepy, too. We just wanted a private moment with you without Gabriel listening in. We've noticed in recent weeks you've become more aggressive. Can you tell us why?
He's been telling me to do things. Bad things. To hurt people.
Is that why you attacked Bobby Faye? But Bobby's twice your size.
Gabriel makes me strong. He told me to kill Bobby.
He actually said those words.
Sometimes he speaks words. And other times the words are in my head. And then they aren't really words anymore. Just feelings. But I knew what he wanted me to do. He pretends to be nice. But he's the devil.
Okay. I'm going to wake him up. Why don't you come around after I've injected him?
Version of a teratoma, a tumor consisting of tissues, hair, teeth, muscles, bones, but more specifically in this case, it's a parasitic twin. When two embryos develop in the womb, don't separate like they should. One twin is dominant while the other is underdeveloped. It's not considered conjoined because the underdeveloped twin is dependent on the body of the other. Like a parasite, Gabriel feeds off Emily.
What's the matter, Pollyanna?
So Gabriel is a parasitic twin feeding off of Emily. He is also the devil. We've confirmed it over and over. And you get the whole scoop via this series of videos. Gabriel is basically connected to the brain, so they can't remove the full body. They have to push a small part of Gabriel back into Emily's skull so that he's always going to be there. Thus, when her prospective baby daddy shoved her head into the wall, he woke Gabriel up because Gabriel was shoved in the back of her skull this whole time, asleep. And so back into the prison cell, Maddie, a.k.a. Emily, she's inside this prison cell and she's getting bullied and Gabriel's not having it. So he takes over her body, and this is where the movie really jumps the shark. And he starts smashing skulls, and somehow the police are also in a fight simultaneously with Gabriel. It doesn't make a ton of sense. And then there's this final showdown in the hospital room. And this is like this, it's so bizarre. It's like this Matrix sequence. It's really corny. In fact, this is where I was like, okay, this movie's dumb. But then, they get out of the prison cell and it spills over into the hospital. There's a final showdown in the hospital room where Maddie, a.k.a. Emily, her blood mother is in bed, in the hospital bed. Because remember, she was tied up in the attic. She's all jacked up. Just threw her hip out or something. I don't know. So Sydney, blood mother, Maddie, as Gabriel, are all in there. Because, let me explain this too. When Maddie was in the prison cell, she's getting bullied and she's just Maddie. She's weak, right? And then she gets mad like the Incredible Hulk and she turns around 180 degrees and in the back of her head, Gabriel comes out and takes over her body. Now she's freaking Neo from the Matrix. Okay? It's very weird. She's walking, she like walks backwards. That's how you know she's Gabriel. Like I said, it's pretty awful. And they're in the hospital room and Maddie is Gabriel, right? She's walking backwards. And Gabriel wants to kill everybody, right? He's just a homicidal maniac. He's the devil, right? The devil doesn't have any survivors. And at this point, we see Maddie go into this black void with Gabriel in her, consciousness. And she declares her freedom from him and talks about how she's going to suppress him. And the way she does this is by putting Gabriel into this jail cell in her mind.
Now I can do all the mind tricks you can.
No, not possible!
Did you forget? We share the same brain.
I didn't ask to be tethered to you. You don't deserve your body. I can use it better than you.
Not anymore. You don't get to control me ever again. It's over, Gabriel. I'm taking it all back. My mind, my body, my everything. Now you get to live in a world that I create.
You can't lock me in here forever. You'll always be stuck with me. Sooner or later, I will get out.
I know. But next time, I'll be ready for...
So Maddie successfully puts Gabriel into a mental prison, okay? Which we'll come back to in just about 1 second here when we hit the conclusion. She proceeds to lift this 1,000-pound hospital bed off of Sydney for no apparent reason. And then she's just like, "I'm sorry, Charlie Murphy. I got control of Gabriel now. I'm sorry I almost killed everybody." Then the final shot that you see in the movie, her blood mother and her sister, they're all hugging, right? But you see the light, the lamp in the room, it starts buzzing and making some static, which is what happened every time Gabriel came around, implying there's going to be a sequel, which I will definitely not watch. So in conclusion, let's wrap up what we saw here. the Blood Mother went through this initiation ritual because she was at the Seattle Underground, right? Underground is where the rituals take place. And the initiate to any secret society knows this. They simulate death. It's about the resurrection of Osiris, right? You have to simulate the death, symbolizing the death of the old ways, the old person, and a rebirth, the baptism into the new enlightened occult ways. So she goes from the Seattle Underground to above Maddie's attic. Way high up, right? She went from, this is a bit of as above, so below. This is the Hermetic axiom, reference to Hermes Trismegistus. It's an alchemical concept. It's a ritual magic concept. And she observed her blood child, Maddie, going through her own awareness. And then she redeems herself by facing the death in the hospital. Right? Maddie's blood mother faced death in the hospital, but that she lived through it. She was initiated this whole time. And if there's a sequel to this hot garbage, I would argue that the mother's probably going to be the focus of the movie. Again, I'm not watching it, so that's enough of me. But you know what? Like, not to keep talking trash, because James Wan gave us some really great movies. I mean, he's batting 95%. That's pretty good. Well, that's not the right number. See, I'm not a sports ball guy. What would I say? He's batting 950%. You know what I'm saying? So the mom goes through this whole thing, Serena May, right? She was raped at 15. Her mom couldn't help her, and there's a spiritual element to it because her mom wouldn't help her because she said the pregnancy was a transgression against God and the child was an abomination, which tells me there was some perhaps incestual action going on here. And we already talked about how it seems in this traumatic-based mind control thing, there's an obsession with this type of stuff, okay? And we talked about how in the hospital, room 17, the QAnon room, is where child services happened. Could it be James Wan is a QAnon kind of guy, and he's trying to make this movie to bring awareness to the idea? Could it be? I don't know. But if you read Kathy O'Brien's Transformation of America, you'll see that there's a coordinated ring of people that are definitely into abusing the kids through repeated abuse of all kinds, of the worst kinds. And that's what Serena May went through, and her involvement in the research facility is very telling too. Because the kid would end up having a bizarro, weird, alter identity, which happens when you get traumatically abused. And should we hit that next? No, let's hit the next big point, that Caduceus trophy. Remember the sword that Gabriel gets, the dagger? It has had the twin snakes on it. Well, that's the symbolism for the reconciliation of the opposing forces, right? Because Maddie, aka Emily May, so she's got an alter ego right for the jump, right? Maddie had another alter, which was Gabriel. So she's got all these alters in her head. And Gabriel was the devil. Now, Gabriel, at the end of the movie, we find out Maddie goes into the dissociative identity disorder state. She creates the amnesic barrier. And what I'm saying is that this is how, and look, I didn't come up with this theory. David Icke is the one that I learned it from watching his videos many, many years ago. He describes it as, like, if you get into a horrific car accident, your brain protects itself by compartmentalizing the memory because it's so traumatic. So, like, a lot of people will go through traumatic events and not have any recollection. They'll have no memory of it. It's like they went blank. and it's the brain's way of protecting. It shuts down. And don't ask me why, I'm not a neurologist, but the brain shuts down and it creates a sort of fragmented piece of the mind. And that's allegedly how the trauma-based mind control happens. They traumatize these kids, and the kids create alter egos, and they compartmentalize these horrific memories. And that's what she does to put Gabriel into the mental prison cell inside of her mind. She creates the amnesic barrier, which is pretty wild, right? Now, who was Gabriel? Well, I told you he was the devil. And he came here to do the devil's work. He was actually the Carl Jung, the Jungian shadow of Emily May, a.k.a. Maddie. And they kept calling him the devil. We saw the facility was hell. It said, "Welcome to hell." And in Jungian terms, the shadow was in fact the devil. The shadow is the dark side suppressed by mankind. And you know, Jung was into all this Gnostic duality stuff with the idea that we need to reconcile the opposing forces of good and evil. We need to take a look at the evil that lies within us and embrace it in order to have full enlightenment and understanding. We have to look at the shadow and embrace it in order to know it. I'm going to read to you from, and I got this from a website, because I was researching some of the Jung shadow devil connections. This is from The Portable Jung by Joseph Campbell, of all people, from the guy who wrote about the hero's journey. It says, "The shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole ego personality, for no one can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the dark aspects of the personality as present and real. This act is the essential condition for any kind of self-knowledge, and it is therefore, as a rule, meets with considerable resistance. Indeed, self-knowledge as a psychotherapeutic measure frequently requires much painstaking work extending over a long period." So there you go. It's all about this wisdom, this enlightenment. It's the initiation into the next phase for Emily May, Maddie. And let's go to another website. This is academyofideas.com. Talking about Carl Jung's shadow dangers. When one tries desperately to be good and wonderful and perfect, then all the more the shadow develops a definite will to be black and evil and destructive. People cannot see that. They are always striving to be marvelous. And then they discover that terrible destructive things happen, which they cannot understand. And they either deny that such facts have anything to do with them, which is what happens with Maddie and Gabriel, right? She has no idea that she's killing all these people. Or if they admit them, they take them for natural afflictions, or they try to minimize them and to shift the responsibility elsewhere. The fact is that if one tries beyond one's capacity to be perfect, the shadow descends into hell and becomes the devil. See? That's what happens with Gabriel. Once she accepts the shadow side, once she accepts that Gabriel's there and looks at him and points the light and the focus and attention towards him, she's able to control him and put him in his little amnesic barrier, DID, dissociative state prison cell. Right? And I've talked about this many, many times. If you want more, if you're very intrigued by all this shadow talk, I wrote a book called The Dark Path, which has hundreds and hundreds of great reviews. Thank you for leaving the reviews. I still do read them all. I told you I read them all, and I do. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds on Amazon and Audible. I specifically talked about the facing of death rituals, like the one Maddie's mother goes through. In fact, I'm going to read you one passage from my own book, from The Dark Path. "Facing one's shadow is the recurring theme found in occult rituals when the initiate is led to believe they are facing imminent danger or even death. They believe it is necessary to integrate the evil and employ the inner devil that can be viewed as strength. Watts, and I'm talking about Alan Watts here, previously mentioned in the book, Alan Watts believed that without the shadow, there cannot be a substance, and I believe he may be somewhat correct. Why do I think he's somewhat correct? Well, you'll have to read the book to find out. In fact, I've got a whole stack of them here because I was going to do a lecture. You can get a signed copy, gumroad.com/IsaacW, or just get it on Amazon or Audible. I don't care where you get it. But it's a really good book. It really is my like magnum opus. If you were to get one book of mine, I got 9 books now. That's the one. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding. All the reviews are really great. So thank you for the good reviews. Now, why did Gabriel remove the serpent from that dagger? I think about the Kundalini energy, okay? This is the serpent energy that represents the fusion of male and female within a person. And these opposing forces initiate the energy transfer through the chakras, through a person's body. Oftentimes engaged through yoga or tantric sex or whatever. And they depict it as a coiled Kundalini serpent at the base of the spine that will, when unlocked, ascend through the body chakras to the tip of the head. And this serpent symbolism is used because the release of that Kundalini serpent energy is a process of rebirth. And the snake sheds its skin, and that's what you see with the Ouroboros, symbolism of the snake eating its own tail. It's this constant rebirth. Because in the occult or New Age ways of thinking, it's a never-ending process. You can keep rebirthing yourself and understanding the world. And I actually know one of my therapists, I have a couple therapists, not to brag, but one of my therapists, he did a bunch of this stuff. Like he knows a lot about Tantra stuff. He's been to India and all this stuff. Very amazing guy. But he's not Illuminate confirm. He's just a nice guy. See, they're not all bad. Not all the people that do this stuff are bad. Unless you ask the evangelicals, then they'll tell you this is all straight from the devil. Even my man, what's his name? I can't think of his name. Father Seraphim Rose. He'll tell you all this stuff is straight from the devil. And look, I don't know what the answer is. I couldn't tell you. All I know is that I love this man. He's a great guy. I'm not advocating to do this stuff myself, but, you know. Anyway, he told me he did this stuff, and he said his Kundalini busted open. He said it was amazing. So I know it happens because I believe this guy, right? But if you read books like Peter Levenda's The Dark Lord, you can read all about the Kundalini serpent and the Tantra sex and how the occultists were doing these practices for many, many, many years. And the question is it evil? Is it devil worship? Or is it a way of a person sort of doing some self-empowerment stuff? That's for you to answer, not me. I can just tell you, I don't have a dog in that fight. I love you either way. Now, the caduceus with the snakes twisting around the staff is what that dagger was, right? And if you've never heard the legend of how that came to be, it's pretty bonkers. And you'll know that's the symbol for the medical profession, right? With the two snakes and the staff. And it goes back in the old ancient days, back in Zep Tepe time. Tiresias was traveling with a staff, like a big stick, basically. And he saw two snakes banging it out. That's crude. Two snakes making love, okay? And he tried to separate these snakes. Well, why? I don't know. Just let nature take its course, buddy. But he decided to get involved. And he tried to separate these snakes with his staff. And they climbed up the damn thing. And they turned him into a woman for 7 years. And don't ask. And they turned him into a woman for 7 years until he's able to find two more snakes making love. And got them to climb the staff and turn him back into a man. That's what our medical doctors use as the symbol for their profession. Now, the staff was considered a very dangerous magical thing back then, right? It wasn't just a walking stick. So he put it in a cave that was shaped like a penis. And that is allegedly the birthplace of Hermes Trismegistus. Hermes the thrice great. And Hermes found this magical staff and he used it for healing. Which is where the medical profession gets the symbol and why they use it. Wild story. So next time you're in the doctor's office, you ask him about that, Caduceus. And see if he tells you it's because snakes were making love and turning men into women and women into men. Because that's what it was. But the snakes, like the Kundalini, represent the healing and the immortal regeneration. Right? The healing and the snake shedding the skin and being reborn. Now also, should you not believe me about Gabriel being the shadow, you look to the bathroom mirror because, okay, so the snakes, the Caduceus is also seen on the head of Baphomet, right? The goat with the boobs, because it's a symbol for reconciliation of opposites, the opposing forces. We get into the Gnostic duality of good and evil and this idea that you need to embrace evil, right? That's kind of the idea. And you also see this in the film in the bathroom where Gabriel first makes contact with Maddie, which I have that image on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Like and subscribe. Robert Sullivan, he wrote three great books that I highly recommend called Cinema Symbolism. And Cinema Symbolism 3, which was just released not too long ago, goes through a lot of the mirror symbolism in several films. I'm going to read you right from the book. Robert Solomon, a guest on this show. So, shout out. Anyway, says, the doubles, and you're talking about how like when a character looks in the mirror, there's like a double image, right? The doubles refer to a representation of the ego that can assume various forms, e.g. shadow, reflection, portrait, double, twin, found in primitive animism as a narcissistic extension and guarantee of immortality. So you can see this goes a bit further, and maybe the reconciliation of opposing forces, her looking into the mirror and looking at her own shadow, at her the representation of the ego, and finding her double is a way of pursuing immortality. Maybe. I don't know. But in the book, Sullivan goes on to discuss this idea that Freud ran with, right? It influenced the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story, as well as the ideas of what a conscious and subconscious are. The idea of the suppressed dark side, the shadow. And he talks about how in alchemy, one must balance these opposites by unleashing the inner beast and destroying the ego, so that the beast can come out. Again, it's looking to the evil within us and allowing it out to reconcile the opposites. He even cites the Da Vinci painting of Mona Lisa and Madonna on the rocks. Because he's talking about how Da Vinci, he reconciled the opposites in some ways. He made these beautiful paintings, right? Beautiful, inspirational paintings. But then he also made blueprints for tanks, killing machines. So he sort of embraced the duality. And mirrors showing a reflection, like the doppelgangers in Black Swan, if you've seen that. It's all about the mirror shows the repressed shadow side, which the ego rejects. So when you stare into the mirror as a character in the movie, you're literally looking past the ego and trying to find a deeper hidden evil within, in some ways, to be simplistic about it. But obviously this can be very dangerous. And that's what this movie's all about. It's all about unleashing the evil within in order to enlighten oneself, to evolve. In fact, you'll also hear throughout the movie a stylized version of the Pixie song that you hear in Fight Club. It's the song Where's My Mind? And Fight Club has almost has a very similar kind of plot. Tyler Durden is the devil, the shadow, and the narrator, Edward Norton, he's the ego, he's Maddie. Right? Operation Chaos unfolds. So there you go. That's my analysis of Malignant. Was it a good movie? No, it was okay. I would not watch a sequel unless the trailer really grabbed me. But yeah, that's what the movie was all about. It was all about reconciling the opposites and the snakes making love. So that's it. All right, I hope you enjoyed that analysis. I know I sure did. And I'll put some links in the show notes for you where you can listen to the Q&A on part one where I talked about the symbolism of 17. I'll have links for The Dark Path if you want to learn more about The Shadow. If you and support the show, you know, you'll be supporting me. You can get the signed copies at gumroad.com/IsaacW or get it on Amazon or Audible, wherever you like to get it. I don't have a preference. Whatever is easy for you. I narrated the one on Audible. It's really great. You're going to love it. So yeah, that's about all I got for Malignant. I'll put the links in the show notes and check out the images on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Boy, so many links for you in the show notes. I hope you know where the show notes are, because I don't. They're actually on IlluminatiWatcher.com, or if you've got the right kind of app, you can kind of like sift through the show notes. All right, everybody. You know what to do. Until next time, stay woke.